Thank you. I was remarking in the small talk before the session started that I'm an urban planner by training, but I finally feel like I've kind of found my way to the people who care about the things that I care about. So I'm kind of a quasi-public health person now. So starting out in environmental justice over 20 years ago and gearing all my academic preparation to a career in academia in environmental justice, and it's been interesting the path that I've led because as you start to do this work and you start to touch the people on the ground, you start to realize that, you know, where your place is in the hierarchy. Some people are really good in some areas, and I found where I was really good, and I feel much better at the community level and sometimes brokering between the community level and others. So that's just a little bit of background on me, and I'm glad I found you. So Thrive. Thrive Toolkit for Health Resiliency in Vulnerable Environments. I'm trying to step back here because I think that I'm getting a little bit of echo. This is a tool that was first funded by the Office of Minority Health back between 2002 and 2004. And at that time, we weren't really talking about social determinants of health. And so what we did is we broke down, we looked at the research, we had an expert panel come together, and we broke down the research on what constitutes a healthy community. And we developed a set of factors based on that, and we developed some community assessments and how to develop plans based on those assessments, again back then. Well, that grant funding ended, and we were able to get some pilots off, which I'll talk about in a bit. But we were renewed in 2010. We reapplied to OMH for funding to support updating the tool, developing training materials to do training of trainers, and also to seed implementation in 20 sites across the country over the 5 years. So that's kind of like another set of background for the Thrive tool here. And when we go out to make our presentations, a lot of times we're not talking to public health professionals. Many times we're talking to just community lay people. So what we start with is trying to get everyone onto the same page with what we're talking about. And that's going to be the first part of my presentation. But first, I have no financial relationships or nothing to disclose. So the way we start is, what's health got to do with it? And for those of you that have seen Prevention Institute presentations, Larry Cohen or Rachel, some of these slides may seem familiar, but we usually run through this with our community partners. You know, we start talking about, what is it in the environment that keeps us from going out and eating healthy and exercising? And right here, this is a place where you're physically in danger of hiking and biking. How about this one? Mixed messages. Another mixed message. Or how about this one? You know, what happens when you see this? You can see this. You know, kids, that's a dumpster they're playing in. You know, kids are kids. Kids will find wherever they can play, where people aren't running them away from. We talk about how this affects health. And these are all things that we all see on a day-to-day basis that many of us don't stop and question. All of us in this room, public health people, we do that. But a lot of, you know, community folk, it's just reality. You know, this is another reality. As is this. The interesting thing is that what our environment, what we become used to, that we don't question anymore, it's literally killing a lot of us and our children and our hopes for the future. So we try to convey that the environment has a huge impact on our health and safety. And, you know, it's easy to see that link between, if you're looking at toxics, but it's a little bit harder to take two steps where we look at how the environment shapes behavior and then in turn how behavior shapes health and safety. Institute of Medicine quote here, it's unreasonable to expect that people will change their behavior easily when so many forces in the social, cultural, and physical environment conspire against such change. And what we're always promoting is primary prevention, going way upstream to address those determinants so that we can stop problems before they occur. So we talk about two steps, and this is the way we explain it. We talk about, okay, so we've got some of the most advanced medical systems in the world, And so when we see something like this, one of the first things we think of is like, you know, what kind of medical care do people have access to? Let's make sure that we have, you know, they can get the emergency room quickly, that they have the latest equipment there, the most highly trained staff. But really, if we want to get at the root of this problem, you know, we need to take a step back. Okay, what's the behavior that caused this? And then we start looking at those different things that happen in society that promote, you know, that type of drinking. Or, if we take it an even further step back, how many of you have seen this? You know, the first time I saw something like this, I was living in New York, and I didn't see this in New York, but when I moved to Albuquerque to do my doctoral research, they had drive-up beer. You would just drive up, and people, you'd give them money, and they'd give you beer. It was kind of interesting. But, you know, what does that promote? It's our environment. And as a number of you, public health people, I didn't study this when I was in planning school, but a lot of you know this from that landmark McGinnis and Fahey paper, you know, the major causes of death. But you, and we tend to look at medical solutions for it, but if we really look at behaviors and activities, you know, we can see that a lot of these stem from common behaviors and activities. So this is so again, positioning the environment as a place that, you know, a key opportunity for prevention. And so this is what we go out, and this is how we start the conversation with our community partners, because they don't understand a lot of the technical terms. They see it, but they just don't word it the same way we do. So this opening resonates with them. This is a misplaced slide, but what's sold and how it's promoted when we're talking about the environment. Again, you know, it's important to recognize just the difference in different places. You know, zip code matters. So we can see like the different profile, you know, from a high wealth and a low wealth. Actually, it's a high wealth and a low wealth neighborhood and community. You know, what are people being pushed to buy, or what are they buying because it's the only thing that's available? I did a study in Phoenix, and I found that in South Phoenix, one only had to travel half a mile to access fast food or a fast food outlet. But from some of the parts of the community, one had to go over up to 2 miles to get fresh food and produce. So, you know, this affects a lot of our health. You know, it limits our choices. So, Thrive. Oh, these are the elements that we came up with under Thrive One, and what we decided to focus on were these three areas: equitable opportunity, place, and people. And the reason that we decided to focus in on resilience and not look at risk are, I'm not going to go through all of these, but these are sort of like the background, how we make the case for why we need to focus on resiliency. And so we did three pilot events, one in Del Paso Heights, which is a suburb of Sacramento, the second in Hidalgo County, which is very rural New Mexico, and the third was in East Harlem, South Bronx, and Central Brooklyn. And this is very, very urban. And, you know, what we did is we engaged the community. We developed a community interest survey, or community assessment, and then, you know, we had people come together, and this is sort of the agenda that we used to get people talking about what was going on in their community and what their expectations were for a healthy community. And so, let me move on to the next one. So then what we would do is we would do the community assessment, and then we would have all the community members come back and we would discuss what we found, what they were telling us. And then we went through a prioritization process where, you know, we developed plans and whatnot to address the different elements or factors that the community had identified. And I'm using this as my outline up here, I'm sorry. Okay, so after 4 months, a 4 months outcome, this is the first initial Thrive that we did. Again, we trained a number of youth on the Thrive Resilience approach, and it's resonated with them to the point where they advocated for a teen center that was ultimately open for them. We established countywide mentoring program. farmers markets were initiated as a direct result of this work. We enhanced public health and housing partnerships that hadn't existed before, and health and the impacts to health started to be addressed through the planning process. How am I doing? So one young youth participant says, Thrive makes me look forward to the future. You know, it started to give them a little bit of hope, and it gave them agency in sort of planning for their community, planning, you know, identifying what the issues were and identifying a path to resolve those. So the overarching outcomes, it contributes to a broad vision about community health, it confirms the value of upstream approaches, it challenges traditional thinking about health and health promotion, and it's a good tool for strategic planning at the community and organizational levels. We found it has rural and urban applicability and suburban. It has a utility for practitioners and community members, and actually gave a platform for that communication to occur across the different areas. The sample of sort of like the community assessment that we use. It's a very simple assessment, and it happened after, you know, we got everyone onto the same page with regard to what these factors were. So we would discuss the factors and we would have them rank. And we would, in some cases, we also trained community members to go out and implement this in different places according, you know, as we planned it. And this is the definitions to help the people that went out to collect this information. And I also have one in Spanish. There it is. Close. So we also did it in Spanish. Two of our communities, the Del Paso Heights and the Hidalgo County, had very large percentages of monolingual Spanish-speaking populations. Then we relied, again, when we brought the information back, the community forums. And, you know, each place was different, but these were some of the top ones that they came up with. And then task forces were formed to develop the strategy, and how are we going to address these things? So the rest of this is just another picture of the community charrette that we held. And this is, you know, what we learned. A community center in Cherryland, which is rural Alameda County, was formed as a direct result of this. The Planning Commission representation was changed as a result of findings from this exercise. School and neighborhood-based violence prevention injury reductions became a specific project that needed to be addressed. And also it gave a way for communities to hold the government a little bit more accountable, because if the community comes up with a plan or says, these are our priorities, how can you help us with this? What can we do about it? It gave them a language to work with the government to hold them accountable. And so I talked a little bit earlier about, these were the expert panel recommendations from the first Thrive, and we are actually following up with most of this through Thrive 2. And I'm really excited about the second funding cycle. Our partner in this is the National Network for Public Health Institutes. They've been a great partner, and although Prevention Institute is taking the tool and updating it, we are actually using the PHIs to go out and recruit trainers and also recruit the implementation sites. And so, you know, between the original tools development back in 2002 to 2004 and today, what we did is we looked at the original factors that we had developed back then, and we compared it to all of these different reports, and we found that the factors that we initially came up with held up very strongly, were aligned with a number of these others, so it confirmed kind of our original research. And so I'm really excited about where we're going with Thrive. We just finished updating it. We're rolling out the training that's going to happen next May, and I'm really looking forward to implementation as we start implementing. I hope to come back to APHA next year with some very concrete results of how our first trainings have gone, the feedback we're getting from them. But I'm one who believes, as many of you do, in the power of community and the need for communities to lead this work, and this is one tool that can help them, help that to happen. So, thank you.